Welcome to the Answers for Elders radio show. Meet the trusted experts who will give you straight answers and will help guide you on the path of later life care. Now, here's your host, founder, caregiver, and CEO, Suzanne Newman.
And welcome back, everyone, to Answers for Elders Radio Network. And I am here again with Andrea Lee. She is an estate planning and elder law attorney in Bellevue, Washington, with Legacy Estate Planning. And Andrea, I'm so glad we're having this conversation, talking about the power of attorney and healthcare directive and all those things. So we started off basically talking about how to select that individual. My question is, what goes on with this? Are there supplemental type documents that goes with that?
Absolutely. So as a quick refresher, we've talked a little bit about financial power of attorney, healthcare powers of attorneys, choosing the right person, someone you trust and who will honor your wishes and who's available to support you as you age. Now, earlier I said estate planning is a little bit like a pyramid. And there, in my opinion, in the very bottom of that pyramid are documents every single person should have. Mm-hmm. And two of those documents are the financial and healthcare power of attorney. But in addition to that, there are a few other documents that every adult should have. You know, my brother Christian should have had them before he became ill. When my daughter became an adult, I drafted them for her because mm-hmm. they're the documents that allow your loved ones to take care of you mm-hmm. when you're alive but unable to care for yourself.
Yeah. And we hate to think about that time if that ever happens. But in reality, I think there's some statistics I read that close to 50% of people over the age of 80, you know, in there are going to need a power of attorney.
I'm not surprised it's not closer to like 80%.
Yeah. They say 50, or it's between 80 and 85.
Maybe, yeah. But there's a huge number of people in the population who at some point or another will benefit from having drafted a power of attorney. Because like I said, if you don't have the basics done, it's a court order. It's a court action. It's expensive and time consuming and a little humiliating mm-hmm. To go through that process. So just putting
another reason why not to do it online.
That's a fantastic point. No, do not do it online. You need to hire... if you are over the age of 65, then I would encourage you to work with an elder law attorney. There are estate planning attorneys who do estate planning and they can do
it earlier when you're younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, number of people are estate planning attorneys, and then elder law attorneys are almost always elder law and estate planning, mm-hmm. but they have a much better understanding of the needs specific to people who age. They might draft the documents slightly differently than in traditional estate planning.
Well, it's totally different goals because if you're younger, mm-hmm. it's about making, you know, finding heirs and making sure that you're building your empire, right? At age of 65, now all of a sudden, you know, a lot of people are on fixed incomes. They're wrapping up. Now it's a matter of, you know, how do I make sure that I'm taken care of in my aging years and how can I pay for long-term care? Those types of things, totally different objectives.
100%. The planning looks different. The objectives look different. And sometimes the documents look different. Now, it's extremely important, like I said, to work with an attorney who practices estate planning and or elder law, depending on your age, for a number of reasons. For example, I practice in the state of Washington. So the state of Washington changed our power of attorney laws in around 2017. And the power of attorney laws became much more difficult to use a power of attorney in some circumstances. Therefore, sometimes people will find an old form online or they're not keeping their documents updated. They think they've done everything right, but they've just let it slide to the side. Then their family members will come in because they've become incapacitated and say, something terrible happened to my dad. He had a stroke. You know, he's incapacitated. We need to use this power of attorney. And then I'll look at it and it won't have the right powers because it was poorly done, or it was too old. It didn't meet the current legal guidelines. And unfortunately, the only solution to that is once again, going back to court because those old powers of attorneys weren't grandfathered in. So extremely important that those documents be properly done, number one, and they be kept up to date.
Yeah. How often would you recommend that they be reviewed?
We ask our clients to come back. We don't charge for the review, but we say come back every 5 years.
Okay.
We oftentimes don't have to make a change in 5 years. Sometimes we do, but that's the opportunity for me to sit down with my clients and say, what's changed in your life? You know, are these still the agents that you want? Has anything changed in your relationship with your son or daughter where you might not want them any longer or change that order? And then it's also an opportunity for us to review any law changes that might have happened since the client's
execution. Which is constantly happening, by the way. Yeah. I know almost every year. I mean, we've got all these new Medicare laws now that have come out and you know, it's just so crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. The laws are changing. And unfortunately, sometimes a law will change and people who think they're in great shape, it turns out, gosh, they're not in such great shape anymore. That's why it's important to make sure you keep that 5-year review appointment with your estate planning attorney.
Well, and your health could change. You might be diagnosed with a chronic condition or where you're going to look at Alzheimer's dementia can be a game changer when it comes to estate planning.
Yeah, and there actually is currently an Alzheimer's Mental Health Advance Directive, which a lot of people don't know about and they don't use. So that's a document that you might not need when you're 30, but when you're 65, it might be something you want to put in place that talks about, hey, if I ever develop dementia or Alzheimer's disease, what do I want my care to look like? You know, back to my client who wrote that beautiful letter to her children, it's an opportunity for an individual to anticipate while they're healthy and competent what they think their future self would like. Yeah. Because sometimes when people develop dementia or Alzheimer's, they're just not rational anymore. And if you could go back and speak to their healthy self, they might tell you something different than what they're telling you once they're in the throes of dementia.
You know, it's really interesting that you say that because how often do we not even think about it? You know, we think, well, what would happen if this happened? You know, we need to do the best we can. So you talked a little bit about some of these advanced directives. Yeah. Tell me about HIPAA.
Okay. So one of the documents that is so frequently overlooked is a HIPAA release. Due to the privacy laws at hospitals, they're not necessarily supposed to share confidential medical information with individuals who are not the person seeking or receiving treatment.
Right.
And in situations with blended families, or actually in any situation, I would say a HIPAA release is extremely important. And that's because an individual might say, name their spouse as their healthcare power of attorney, and that individual is charged with making all the medical decisions for them, but they might also want to make sure that their children, who may or may not be the children of that spouse, be able to visit them at the hospital anytime,
learn
information about their care, find out what is the status of mom or dad. And without that HIPAA release, the hospital is only required to provide medical information to the one agent named in that healthcare power of attorney.
Wow.
And there have been instances where individuals have been isolated from their loved ones because their one healthcare power of attorney has told hospitals or medical institutions or adult family homes, do not share information with these individuals. Mm-hmm. And I'm the healthcare agent. I'm the one who gets to make decisions on behalf of the incapacitated person. Legally, I don't want information shared with their children or their siblings. And maybe if that person who was incapacitated was competent, there's no way they would want their children kept away from them.
No, that's true.
So people sometimes don't realize how important that HIPAA release is in making sure your family members can get medical information and care information.
Yeah.
Should you be incapacitated.
And then on the next thing, the last thing I want to talk about is a POLST form. Physician's Order of Life Sustaining Treatment. Yep. We have a lot of seniors out there that may be, you know, at the congestive heart failure, a lot of things that can happen. And if they're incapacitated when paramedics show up, what happens?
Well, so if you do not have a POLST form and something happens to you, then when the aid car shows up, they're going to give you max treatment. And they're going to take you to the hospital and they're going to do everything they can to revive you and to save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to talk about a pulsed form, but there's also a form that I provide to my clients and that estate planning and elder law attorneys do provide called a living will.
Yes.
And people sometimes confuse the two documents, a living will versus a pulsed form.
Right.
So a pulse form, like you said so eloquently, is a physician's orders for life-sustaining treatment. And that's what it is. It is an order signed by your doctor. So an attorney cannot give you a pulse form. Your medical doctor can. But in your, at least in the state of Washington, currently, they're usually lime green. And the idea is...
It's my understanding they're lime green in every state.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't certain. I didn't want to give bad advice.
Yeah, they're lime bright neon green.
So you can't miss them. And the idea is, well, I'll talk about my neighbor, Ruth. I had a neighbor, Ruth, who was a fabulous neighbor. And she was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And she knew she was dying and she was doing well, but had some pain. And so she actually came to me and said, my doctor wants me to sign this thing called a pulse form. Well, what do you think? And so I sat down with her and I said, well, you're dying of cancer. If you had a heart attack, would you want them to bring you back so that you could die more slowly of cancer? And she was like, no. I mean, if I had a heart attack right now, I don't want any treatment because I know
then
that
you
I'm dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And so for her, she made the choice to say, hey, if something happens to me and I die, then I do not want CPR. I do not want to be revived. Because
right.
If I am, what's going to happen is I'm not probably going to recover and then my death will just be slower.
Right.
So a pulse form is a document provided by your medical doctor that gives direction regarding emergency care.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's an essential tool. For someone like my neighbor, Ruth, who had lung cancer, she would not want treatment if she died. Somebody who's aged, very frail, and they're ready to go. You know, they don't want CPR because they know that they probably would not recover. They might want something that says, just let me go if I die.
Yeah.
However, for many individuals, even if they're 75 or 80, maybe they don't need a pulse form, but what they do need is a living will. And hopefully you have a living will. I have a living will. And the difference between a pulse form and a living will is the pulse form typically provides direction to emergency personnel. It can also provide some information in the living will.
Right.
But someone like myself, I don't have a pulse form. I don't want a pulse form right now. But I have a living will that says, hey, if I'm in a car accident, if I have a stroke, if I have a heart attack, please do everything possible to treat me. You know, give me CPR, rush me to the hospital, maximum treatment. But once the medical team has done everything possible, if two physicians determine that there is no hope I'm going to improve, you know, I'm either in a permanent vegetative state, I'm actively dying, there is no reasonable hope I'm going to get better at all, and I can't express my wishes, so I can't say what I want, then the question becomes, do you want to be let go? Do you want to be kept comfortable but have them remove life-sustaining means like hydration, nutrition, ventilation?
Right.
Right. And that's a different scenario because very different scenario. So living wills are documents that every single person should have.
Yeah. And usually when somebody goes into the hospital, they will say, do you have a living will or do you have, that's something that's triaged. And if you don't have one, I've known of times where they will actually come to you and ask you those questions. Isn't that true?
That is true, but I always tell people, do not sign the living wills that are provided by the hospitals.
Oh.
That's my recommendation. And the reason is the ones by the hospital, and they're going to tell you, no, it's because we want to know what your wishes are.
Right.
But those ultimately are designed to protect the hospital. They are designed to put someone in a position that you are telling the hospital what you want. Yeah. But a well-drafted living will by an attorney or a professional outside of that hospital community expresses your wishes, but makes it clear. It makes it clear that this is a guide and that your loved ones ultimately get to decide your end of life treatment. Mm-hmm. So that's a small nuance. It's extremely important. So I do tell people, beware of legal documents that come from a source that benefit you for having it done.
Yeah.
You know,
so
we are
talking again to attorney Andrea Lee, and we will be back for our final segment right after this.
We at Answers for Elders thank you for listening. Did you know that you can discover hundreds of podcasts in our library on senior care? So visit our website and discover our decision guides that will help you also navigate decision making. Find us at answersforelders.com.